Hello and welcome to We the People. I'm Gargi Rawat. The Me Too movement, where women speak out against sexual harassment, has well and truly arrived in India. And it's shaking up not just Bollywood, but the media as well. It's been a very emotional, difficult and angering last couple of days. There's been an outpouring on social media with countless women sharing their stories of sexual harassment in the workplace and especially in the media. Now, well-known editors, journalists have been accused, as have poets, writers and even directors. Now, while earlier there was the Tanushree Dutta allegation against Nana Patekar, it has moved beyond Bollywood after allegations of sexual misconduct against a comedian, Utsav Chakrabarty. That in turn saw journalists then start sharing their stories of harassment as well, which also sparked a lot of anger and outpouring online. And today on We the People, we're saying time's up. It's time for things to change. So far, many media houses have reacted to the allegations and claim they're looking into it. The Mumbai Press Club has said that they are in solidarity with women who've spoken out and are also looking at means to address their concerns. We've also seen a Bollywood production house, Phantom Films, dissolved after one of the partners was accused of sexual assault and the other partners were accused of not having done enough when the woman made the complaint. Well, to start off the show, I'd first like to go across to Sandhya Menon, a reporter who was one of the few journalists who started it all by speaking against several editors. She spoke about her own experiences and she spoke about the harassment that she faced from them. And her thread actually led to this dam bursting and many, many allegations. So, Sandhya, tell us, what made you finally speak out?
It isn't quite so much that I've shared it for the first time. I've talked about it on my blog in 2011, so it's not like I've been keeping quiet about it and was just waiting to get out there. I've been speaking to my colleagues, friends, warning them all off. I think what set it off was, for the past year, I've been trying to make up my mind about what counts or constitutes as harassment at work and what just counts as bad sexual behavior or bad social interaction. I've been trying to make up my mind because there's stories all over the place, right? And I've been trying to figure out where to draw the line, what is harassment, what is bad behavior. And for the past year, the Me Too movement in the West has been just, you know, it hasn't died down. There's every few months, there's something or the other coming up. And for me, it was really inspiring to see how Harvey Weinstein went down. And not that I took inspiration from that, but I think that just primed us and prepped us for what just happened. So when a couple of people were talking about the bad experiences that they had with the comedians, I just said, you know what, about time, because I was in two minds, so I checked with a friend. I said, dude, I have these stories, and I've spoken to everyone about the people that I know have spoken to about these things, but I'm just going to go public with them. He's like, yeah, why not? And I think that's just a little push that I needed. And I said, okay, here goes nothing, you know?
All right, Sandhya, so you shared your own stories, and that led to an outpouring of various stories by various women, young and old, some talking about incidents that occurred many years ago, some talking about more immediate incidents. But what do we do now? How do we harness all this? What do you want to emerge from this outpouring of anger that we've seen?
I'm hoping very, very hard that this doesn't die down with a whole bunch of angry women getting together on Twitter and saying it. I think it's really encouraging that all the people, at least all the people that I have accused of this or I have called out, have responded one way or the other. I'm not very impressed with the responses, but I think the fact that they have taken cognizance of this and have responded is encouraging for me. What I hope to see happen, I'd really like to see every media house just tighten what's loose about sexual harassment policies in their workplaces. Now, there are newspapers that have all kinds of checks and balances, right? Regular HR meetings, regular sexual harassment workshops, anonymous forms, you know, male editors staying back till all the female employees have gone away, and it still happens. And it took Twitter to bring this out. I mean, with such transparency and such signaling of availability and safe spaces, women are still not feeling safe enough to go there and go to their bosses and talk about this. Largely because I think you know, when as human beings, when we're hit with something like that, our tendency is to just explain it away and say, it's okay, I'll deal with it, I'll have a chat. Nobody wants to go official right at the beginning, which I think is fair enough in some cases. But I'm hoping that will change. I'm hoping from now on, people will take it really, really seriously and tighten all this. So the Sexual Harassment Act, Harassment in Workplaces Act, it's pretty vague. I mean, today's the first time I sat down and went through it, and all kinds of it leaves a lot of things to interpretation. Like within a time bound period. Now, what is a time bound period? Should you resolve it within 3 months? Should you resolve it, you know, if you don't have a specified time slot, are you going to take 3 months? Are you going to take 2 years? And am I going to get tired after 2 years and say, you know, I don't want to work here anymore and move out? Or things like the appropriate committee gets together. Now, who decides the appropriate committee? Who decides who's appropriate to be on the committee? So it leaves a lot of things really vague. So I'm just hoping that will tighten. I'm also hoping that there will be very, very clear lines that men understand. Now, I think a lot of men have heard them say now that they don't understand what boundaries are, and they're just being flirtatious. They're just being a little, you know, it wasn't at work. I took her out for drinks later, all of that. But I think, and it sounds terrible right now, but I think just being afraid of being shamed publicly might make them look within and say, hey, you know what, I've got to pull up my act and do better. Because it's ridiculous to say that, oh, I was drunk, or right. I realized I was married. Did you not realize then? Like, what sense does that make? So I'm in a very concrete way, I'm hoping that, yeah.
Right. All right, Sandhya, thank you so much for, speaking out, and, more power to you. And yes, we do need to harness this and see that it goes somewhere. And before I go to the other journalists on the panel here, I'd like to go across to Vasu Primlani, a stand-up comedian and actor. And Vasu, now, this latest round that we've seen of Me Too, of women coming out and speaking, started with a stand-up comedian, Utsav Chakrabarty, being called out. There were allegations that he would send unsolicited pictures of his genitals to women, and that's absolutely shocking. And, you know, also ask them for pictures in return. And that, after a couple of women, you know, spoke out about this, it led to the journalists speaking out. But coming from the space of a stand-up comedy, it's been very disappointing, because I've been told this is just the tip of the iceberg. There are allegations against other stand-up comedians as well. You had AIB apologize, which people, some accepted, some were not very happy with. But as a stand-up comedian yourself, it's been fairly disappointing to see what's been going on.
Well, so let me tell you, stand-up comedians are a cutaway of society. There is a huge amount of sexual harassment that goes among comedians as well. You don't know how many complaints I get from amateur comedians themselves, female comedians saying that I've been inappropriately hit on by senior comedians, and there is no action taken against them. And people don't even speak up against it, because these are very powerful comedians. So every single sector of society, from the government to comedians to the police, are part of Indian society. And in as much as that's true, they're also part of the way Indian men think, period, regardless of what profession they take up. So the elemental issue is not the profession itself. You will find that disappointment in every sector in India where men are working.
Right, clearly. And this whole stand-up comedian, this industry, it's very informal. The only, I think, impact that we've, or any sort of reaction that we managed to get, is to have AIB speak out about it and admit that they were wrong and that they should have cut off Utsav when they were aware of these allegations.
So here's the thing. See, in terms of public shaming, there's a reason that women are forced to take up that methodology rather than legal methodology. Because the legal system in India is so broken that you don't get any justice. I think something like the conviction rate for even rapists is like 3% in India, so it's abysmal. So there they resort to public shaming, and I'm not comfortable with shaming of any kind. I'd rather have these men be educated, because it comes from somewhere. mostly it comes from boys who have been abused themselves and they have no sense of boundaries. They don't respect themselves, that's why they don't respect you. They have seen or been personal victims of abuse or rape themselves, which is why they grew up the way they did. So you have to understand where this comes from rather than pointing fingers, throwing stones or shaming
people. Right. All right, Vasun, you said this is the tip of the iceberg. Namita, I'd like to come to you next. As a senior journalist and someone who's been in journalism for so many years, back in your day, there was the Whisper Network. Women would talk to each other, warn each other about certain men and you know, about spending time alone with those certain men. But now to have these have women speaking out, journalists, and raging about the sort of treatment they've got, the harassment that they faced, and also lost out in careers, because I've read accounts of girls who actually left journalism, women who found they were sidelined after they complained.
Absolutely. It's actually very liberating for someone of my generation to see this brave new generation of women who will not tolerate this kind of nonsense anymore. They have new tools at their disposal. You know, they have screenshots, they have evidence, which is, I mean, the technology has also made the abuse more possible, right? People are sending photographs, which they weren't doing at my time. At my time, as you said, there was a Whisper Network. People knew which editor to stay away from or which supervisor to stay away from, and we coped. And, you know, our struggle was different. We were struggling just to get a toehold into the newsroom. You know, we were so few in number. Today, when you walk into a newsroom, it's filled with women.
Right.
You know, and so I think there is strength in number. And as I said, this is my generation was brought up to be nice. You know, we are bringing up our daughters to say, you know, you don't have to be nice. You don't have to put up with any kind of bullshit at work or outside. And it is actually, I'm learning from this. I'm learning from this generation of women.
All right, and you're saying this is liberating for you to see, because the Whisper Networks were there, but now to have women speaking out. Vasu was talking about how this naming and shaming and, you know, a lot of these allegations that are going on online. Yes, we've had reactions. We've had reactions from Times of India as well and various other news organizations, but there are a lot of names being taken. What is your opinion on that?
Well, some of the names have admitted. Some of the names
right.
have apologized. So, you know, there is a mea culpa for whatever it's worth happening with the names. Nobody wants, you know, we women of my generation, we want to be able to say, I want to be able to say to every woman here, please believe in due process. But when you look at due process and how broken it is, you can understand where the rage and frustration is coming from. You can understand why. I mean, please tell me why 3 years after a woman filed a complaint against R.K. Pachauri, the trial is yet to begin. The charges have just been framed. And he is invited all over the world to attend award ceremonies. Why? Because in a civilized system, due process, right? He's innocent until proven guilty. So you've destroyed a life. You're merrily getting on with
it. Right.
How do you tell? How do I tell these women, please believe in due process? Due process is broken.
All right. Stigdha, I believe for every woman who's speaking out right now, every journalist who's speaking out, there are at least a dozen who are not speaking out, and it's being, again, whispered or talked about on WhatsApp. And, you know, these last couple of days to read those stories, it's been very emotional, difficult. I found it very angering, and I feel like maybe in NDTV I've been very protected from all of this. But to see what fellow journalists go through, it's been very, very difficult.
It's been a huge moment. I haven't been able to do anything for 3 days now, but just feel overwhelmed.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, we are speaking to each other over whatever platform, Twitter, Facebook, WhatsApp, emails, women are sharing stories. I have worked in the industry for many years now, full-timer, freelancer, reporter, editor. I haven't met a single female colleague who hasn't faced sexual harassment of one kind or the other, verbal or physical or sexual. It could be, you know, senior male editors like commenting on your clothes, or, you know, I mean, people like, you know,
like what Sandhya spoke about,
your
that a lot of people don't know, a lot of men don't know what the boundaries are. It seems there's a lot of confusion in people's minds.
I mean,
they're not sure if you're out of the workspace, you're having a drink, do the rules change?
Let's not even talk about boundaries. I've heard stories from female colleagues of their supervisors clearly demanding sexual favors for them to be able to carry on with their jobs. And when that was denied, in more cases than one, you know, they faced consequences. Their appraisals were held up. Their stories were killed. They felt more and more pressure to give in. And even when they like complain to these like internal committees at their workplaces, nothing happened. They kept like they were made to report to the same person. I mean, the
so no action was taken.
And I think that the
and they continue like, to feel unsafe in
yes,
the workplace.
Yes, and I mean, we just spoke about how liberating it is for Namita, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like things haven't changed that much. I mean, most people. You know, there are still men in positions. Me Too is about power and abuse of power. And I think if you don't put women in positions of power, then how are things going to change? I mean, if you look at any big media organization, it's like all men at the top.
All right. I just want to clarify. Yeah. Yes, it is liberating, but it's also very enraging. It's also very triggering because, you know, we've been through this. So it's triggered up memories that you feel that you suppressed for 20, 30 years. And there is a real anger, and this anger cuts across all age groups. And I personally am angry that nothing has changed in 30 years.
All right. So Sanjay, clearly the due process is not working. It seems that that is one of the problems that we're seeing. And as a lawyer, I mean, women who speak out find themselves victimized and, sidelined in their jobs, some even having to leave their jobs. So their right to dignity, their right to freedom of work, etc., is all impacted.
I entirely agree, but if there's anything that we lawyers hold holy, it is due process. Because the moment you dilute due process for one thing, then let's knock off due process altogether. You're accused of theft, forget due process. You're accused of murder, forget due process. That's a slippery slope I won't go down.
All right. Have an issue with this naming and shaming.
No. Naming and shaming, that is a personal decision of the victim, whether she wants to come out. Because when she comes out to name and shame, she's also putting out in public something which deeply scarred her.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
And there would be people...
It's not easy, even
she's subjecting herself to a judgment. We've just seen in the U.S. what's happened with Brett Kavanaugh and Mrs. Ford. So Mrs. Ford has this recollection of what happened 30 years ago when they were teenagers. Now, this is a man who's about to go to the Supreme Court.
And now is a Supreme Court justice.
And has now gone to the Supreme Court. When she came out and she swore testimony, what was the process followed? Whether that process was fair enough? It's in a different context altogether. But nevertheless, the emotions are the same. The emotions are on her part a need for vindication, maybe a need for closure, a need to let it out. On his part, or those who defend him. Some don't remember it. Some say it could have happened. Some say it's so long ago. And what happened so long ago, should it cast a cloud on the man that you currently are?
These are difficult questions. Going forward, men will behave themselves better.
These are difficult questions. I'm not making a call.
Sure, and this is the time for us to ask all these questions. Out. Yes. Siddharth, quickly, what do you feel about due process? Due process has obviously failed. That is why women are speaking out. Sandhya, we had on earlier, she spoke about how she'd blogged about it. She'd even complained to one of the senior women in one of the newspapers who just casually said, no, he's like this and just don't take it so seriously. So obviously, women aren't feeling protected in the workplace.
I agree with the last statement, but we need to understand what the state of the law was. Till we got the Vishakha judgment, we really had no regulations in relation to women being harassed in the workplace. So that comes in the mid-90s. There was no legislation at the time. The Supreme Court came out with a series of directions, and that put into place the first so-called reform, or first so-called regulation of women's concerns of not being harassed at their workplace. The second change that happened was when we brought in a legislation as late as 2013.
That's
a serious concern. So you see, mid-90s till 2013, we know there's a problem, but it was not addressed. It finally did get addressed. And that's the legislation that's now taken into place. That's the one that regulates how these matters are to be dealt with, how inquiries are to be done, how due process is to be maintained. It's a work in progress in that sense, and it has timelines. That's the administrative mechanism part. It can also lead to criminal prosecutions. The second part and the contemporaneous reform was, and that is the change in the criminal law, because earlier we had really three offenses, 509, which was making an indecent comment in front of a woman, indecent act or comment, 354 was outraging the modesty of women, and the highest being rape. There was no other offense, really, right, in the Indian Penal Code, and there was no other offense. So that amendment also came about a few years ago, and that brought the second change. Now, having said that, today we have a legislative framework for the first time which deals with various aspects of sexual harassment, whether at the workplace or otherwise. So there's a criminal law remedy and there's an administrative mechanism.
In due process and going to court, no, and it dragging Dr. Pachauri or Tejpal, the cases are just dragging on and on.
May I just explain this to you? There's a larger issue, because the larger issue is not just about this. The larger issue is that while we all hold due process, because, well, the Indian legal system believes that everybody is innocent till proven guilty. You may want them to be proven guilty, or I may want them to be proven guilty. I believe a person's conduct may be deplorable, but the constitution and a person's right to innocence is considered sacrosanct. Once he is prosecuted, convicted, yes. The fundamental problem is the criminal processes are not the way they should be. They need to be faster. The CRPC provides a mechanism for trials to be day to day. We don't have trials day to day. There are enough challenges that happen, and that is the reason for these.
All right, we also have Rahul Ishwar joining us, and I believe he wants to make a point. Rahul, you've been listening to all the panelists talking about women finally speaking out, and how workplaces need to become a lot safer. And clearly, media as well, in the media as well, in corporate world, we need to make places safer for women to work in.
Absolutely, there is no difference of opinion regarding that point, and we all respect and empathize.
Right, all right, we seem to have...
The vein with which our sisters are something remind, we should be careful enough that this thing is not misused. If one person is accused of one particular molestation 10 years ago, or say 5 years ago, how do they disprove it? That's also a question we have to think about. Because many a times, at least some cases are there where the gross misuse has happened. Same as in the dowry law, or same...
All right, so you're talking about how sometimes...
Every 2 weeks or... So there is a checks and balances to be there, and checks and balances should definitely be considered while doing about this, and checks and balances is very important. Otherwise, and please remember, due process is a holy thing, and holy because it is some kind of a check and balance. So that due process, some kind of leverage for the man, so that he can prove the others wrong. It shouldn't be merely depending on the woman's statement, because otherwise, if a woman is, settling the scores, or I know 99% of the women may not do it, but if one person decides to do it, men are also going to suffer. So
but
we
half
shouldn't
the time,
close
women
our eyes
who complain don't even find their complaints taken seriously. So I mean, this is a very small percentage.
I have data. I have data for this. I have data for this. There was a survey by the Indian Bar Association in 2017. Yes. Where 70% women do not report sexual harassment. They would rather quit their jobs. I have another survey of 2010 which shows that 88% of women in the IT and BPO sector have experienced some form of sexual harassment. You're talking about misuse. Yes, nobody wants an innocent man to be crucified. Nobody, no feminist I know wants that. But what you're talking about, right. Look at the numbers you're talking about.
So in fact, I'd like to now go across to Raya Sarkar, who, if we're talking about the Me Too movement coming in a big way right now in India, Raya, it was really last year when you came out with your list of academics, of professors against whom there were whispers, there were complaints among students about sexual harassment. It was very controversial at the time, Raya. And again, we're seeing a similar sort of thing. I'd say like a lot of names being taken right now, and there have been reactions as well. What do you feel about what's happening right now?
I think as lawyers, as legal, have the responsibility to build jurisprudence. We cannot see due process as this static thing that has always existed, and we cannot unquestioningly follow due process without questioning, the limits of it, the failing people. We cannot trust due process in a way without taking input from people as to how due process has or how it has failed them. Or we cannot, basically we can't see it as something that is so sacrosanct that it is beyond criticism.
All right, okay. Raya, in your list, it created a big controversy last year. It was just last year, in fact, I think October 2017 when your list came out, and it was a massive controversy. You had many feminists, in fact, talking about it and saying that they were not in favor of this naming and shaming. But again, coming back to due process, that is the reason for a list like that or for outing people's names. And there was also an issue about the complainants being kept anonymous. So, you had this entire controversy back then.
Right. And the reason why I created the list was not to bypass due process, but because due process has failed people, there's a reason why approach due process only after a lot of convincing and after they had resources to do so and the emotional support and the legal, the capacity, the monetary capacity to do so. Right? And because they didn't have these resources at hand, and because due process is structured in a way that it demoralizes the victim and it discourages them to go to due process, I thought that a good way to point this out and to also create a database for women to keep safe in the absence of working due process would be to create a list.
All right. I'd like to now go across to Karuna Nandi. She's also joining us on this entire issue. And Karuna, so Raya Sarkar is speaking about how due process is problematic sometimes for women. They don't have the courage to go through the entire process, which is why she came out with her list last year. Now what we're seeing is pretty amazing, to have women speaking out the way they have been and getting reactions, because many accounts have been corroborated. We've had reactions from media houses as well. So women finally speaking out, and clearly there's a lot of sexual harassment that's taking place in the workplace, in media houses, who are the ones who are supposed to be reporting on it and calling it out.
What is due process, Kargi? If due process is the powerful decision-making authorities that enforce punishment, making sure that justice is done and making sure that there is fairness whenever there is an allegation of harm from one person against another. For centuries, not for decades, for centuries, Dalit women, powerful women in media houses, women in Bollywood, other women have been yearning for due process, yearning. And it has not happened. It has failed us. Now, on the back of the uprising after the Nirbhaya killing in 2013, there was some improvement. So in 2013, because of that uprising, because women, children, men came out onto the streets and said enough, that this is that we are not getting due process. The state needs to evolve. The state needs to change. There were some very important provisions that came into the law. So, for example, Section 166A, by which if a police officer does not register your FIR in these cases of sexual harassment, 509 right. and of rape, 375, they themselves can be charged with a criminal complaint. What has happened now? Fed up with the situation, women are reclaiming their power and reclaiming their voice. And now the onus on the due process is on the patriarchy. Now, this is in a sense civil disobedience. It's an uprising in terms of civil disobedience. And the onus is now on the patriarchy and men, to make sure that, not all men, obviously, there are a lot of men supporting this, but on the patriarchy, really, to make sure that there is due process, because power is being reclaimed.
Now, all right, I'd like to take that point across that to Snigdha, in fact, now...
There's a lot that is being said about false complaints.
Right.
If I may just very quickly
all
finish.
Right,
there's a lot that's being said about false complaints, right? Let us be clear that it's even in the small percentage that there are false complaints, right? That... If you look at the level of there is the limited injustice in the vast swath of justice that may be happening, that let's keep that in perspective. But also, I will personally reserve my right in this imperfect world, in this imperfect situation, to decide on my own, to see the evidence and to see that, okay, I feel like in this case, injustice has prima facie in this imperfect world, an injustice has been done, and to act accordingly.
All right, Snigdha. So I will go to what the lawyers next, but Snigdha, what do you feel? What do you want to see happen now, given this outpouring that we've seen, and Karuna's talking about it now? Will men also have to take responsibility, take action, and listen to the women and in various organizations have, you know, punishments, have men facing the laws or the rules or the internal committees that are supposed to be there?
I mean, just one quick thought on due process, which is that, 90% of Indian female workforce is employed in the unorganized market, and where there are no institutional mechanisms for dealing with complaints of sexual harassment. So, I mean, as much as I would like to have the same level of faith in the due process as gentlemen have, I don't think that that's like my focus right now. I think that we need to address the culture of toxic masculinity that exists in Indian workspaces. And I think that we can begin by putting more women in positions of power. I'm not saying that women are always better than men in dealing with complaints.
Right, because in some of the cases we've had senior women who've not taken complaints of young journalists very seriously.
Yes, but I think it's important for like younger professionals to see that, there are more women in positions of power. I think it's some of us like work in organizations where there are due processes, where there are institutional mechanisms, but I think that there's very little faith amongst at least female journalists in those mechanisms. A number of these people who have now come out first went to their internal committees.
Absolutely, and that's where it fails. Sanjay, what would you say to that? I mean,
no, I just wanted to define for the benefit of the audience and everyone, what is due process? See, you don't need due process at the stage of the allegation. Each time somebody puts out a list, that's an allegation. It's what happens after that is due process.
Or when a woman complains that
when a woman complains, what is it that is supposed to be done?
Like if I may come in, after that.
Right, just a moment.
What is it that is supposed to be done? You summon the man. That is, he gets notice. He's told of the allegations against him. He's entitled to face those accusations. She's entitled to produce her evidence. He's entitled to produce his evidence, and then the committee takes a call. That is all that due process is about. I don't believe due process stands in the way of women making a complaint. But there's one little thing that has happened. Why has this movement come about now? What has also happened is technology has empowered. Technology has empowered all
absolutely,
of us.
Absolutely, yes.
If you did not have Twitter, if you did not have Facebook, you would still be at the
That's
whisper.
That's what Namita was speaking yes. about. Yes,
you would be at the whisper.
Screenshots as well.
You would be at the whisper network stage.
Therefore, just
one more point before I finish off. The technology also has given you now evidence. When somebody sends that dirty picture, it remains on your phone. It can be forensically examined. When somebody flirts with you on chat, save the chat, the screenshot, that's one.
All right.
It all comes down to there is a different balance of power.
All right, before we talk further on this, I'd like to talk about another issue, and I'd like to go back to Sandhya about this. Sandhya, now there's been a lot of outpouring. There have been a lot of people speaking out about their various experiences of sexual harassment in the workplace, but also speaking about bad dates, bad sex that they've had, men, asking them for sex, and it's all become a little muddled. That's what a lot of people are also speaking out, criticizing, saying that, that you have to draw a line. What is sexual harassment in the workplace? What is it that constitutes this, a bad experience that a woman would have had, and we can't, blur it and treat it all as one. What would you say to that?
So I think I'm on the side of drawing a very clear line between sexual harassment in the workplace and bad social behavior on a date or when you're out with friends. I draw a very clear line. I'm not saying either one is more traumatic, or I'm not saying either one is more important or less important than the other. Both are traumatic in their own ways. Both are annoying. Sometimes it's not as bad as traumatic. Sometimes it's just plain annoying, right? Both are terrible in their own ways. But I think those of us who have spoken about sexual harassment in the workplace, I think I'd like us to focus on that, because Like I said on my Twitter some time ago, it really damages livelihood, career prospects, and ambition, right? I don't see why we should ignore a woman's ambition. And if being harassed at work is going to put a clamp on her ambition, I don't think it's a... I think it's a cause that you need to work a lot towards. As far as, you know, the bad dates are concerned, some are bad dates, some are terrible dates, right? It's you want to humiliate and embarrass the man who has done that to you on Twitter. I think you should, if you need to. But bundling that with sexual harassment at work and tagging the police and that, unless you're underage, which is a completely different thing, but tagging the police and that sort of thing, I don't think so. Unless, see, again, who am I to say what's violence and what's not, right? So I'm not going to touch that whole, if it's violent, if it's rape, go to the police. But if it's just discomfort and if it's just really bad social conduct, and I don't think Indian men know how to be charming or how to charmingly ask for sex, and it's really easy to do that with most Indian girls because we just like guys, you know, we're okay. And it just doesn't, it, Indian men just don't get it. So... So I think it's important to draw that distinction between workplace, and this is bad conduct. So if you want to go ahead and shame the person who has humiliated you, who has hurt you, I think you should, because it then sends out a little manual. Now, if you're going around, if a 27, 22, 23-year-old is saying mental health, drunk, entitlement, whatever, if he's saying these things and he doesn't know, he's saying, you know, I don't know what the boundaries are, then here's a nice little manual with all these women have talked about in the last 3 days. These are the things you shouldn't do. Check, 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 you know. So it's a nice little manual. In that way it works. But it really shouldn't really mix up with sexual harassment in the workplace. That's a different beast. It affects lives. I'm a single mother. And I earn for my family. And if that affects me and if I don't have a job, that's a serious situation for me. You know, so that's what I believe.
Right.
Two different things. Fight it differently.
All right, fight it differently. How many of you think shaming is all right, what we're seeing going on with people, you know, naming and shaming men? Do you think it's all right? Well, raise your hands. Who thinks it's all right that, as she was saying, that outing people's names of people who may have misbehaved?
Yeah.
You think it's all right? So why do you think that's all right?
I feel we were talking about due process being not as quick as it should be. So then how do young women like me gain the courage to go to the police? And if the Me Too movement is giving us, any woman for that matter, the courage to speak up before they take some legal
action.
Well,
going to the police would be later. You'd first go within, hopefully, your workplace or if you're in college, then... Right.
Yeah, but then...
But you're saying...
Yeah, but then often we don't get that environment to go and speak up. We talked about that. The due process is not so effective in workplaces as well. So why not speak about it on social media in an environment
that
is there today?
What would you say to that?
You know, there's a, as I said, due process may not be as fast as we'd like it to be. But the fact of the matter is, are we going to turn this into a situation? And I'm not saying naming and shaming is necessarily a bad thing, because I don't believe it's a bad thing. Are we going to turn it into a situation where we are critical or vocal about every little issue? We have to be vocal. I believe we have to be vocal. We have to express our angst. Sometimes these issues are 20, 30 years, as we've seen in the US situation, and these have to come forth because there are two parts. One part is if somebody has misconducted himself in the past, the question in the Kavanaugh thing is he fit to hold a post where he has to discharge public office? And that's a very serious concern. But I'm going to tell you another case. You know, we had a case in India of a judge who was questioned on this, and he went through an impeachment process. This happened a few years ago. He finally got exonerated.
Right, he was
by the end of it. He got exonerated by the committee appointed by the Rajya Sabha. He went through the process, but in the process, and the credibility of the person completely finished. He's never been able to regain his credibility. He never got any promotions. He got everything. So there's that aspect of it.
All right,
that
I'd like to take that.
I just need to say
yeah,
something.
Yeah, that's also true. It doesn't always just that he was exonerated.
I just need to add something. The point is, and we have a serious concern about underreporting. This is one area where there's large underreporting. But please understand, in India, across the board, there is great underreporting. There are three categories we have to look at. One is the inquiry. We have to ensure after the legislation has come in, every institution has to have an inquiry committee and it must be effective as per the law. But on the criminal law, wherever a lady moves, and I can tell you on the statistics, after
Karuna wants to react to what we're talking about.
Yeah, I'd like to react to it now. You know, what the points Mr. Luthra is making look are perfectly reasonable, right? But what he's not considering, and you know, of course, he's a friend and I have great respect for him, but I think that what he's not considering here is the imbalance in power, right?
No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm totally agreeing.
Privilege is a habit, justice is oppression. Justice looks like oppression.
Can I just say one
thing? No, so she's, I agree with her on imbalance of power. There is a problem. That's why we need to remedy that. There's no dispute on that.
The point that Snigdha is making is that most people are in the unorganized sector. So, for example, even a lot of the journalists that are complaining are freelancers.
Are freelancers,
that's
right.
Some of our most eminent journalists, and I include Snigdha in that. She's written a fantastic book, is a freelancer. I mean, I don't know if she's still a freelancer, but has been at some point a freelancer, right? So now the point is that how do we make sure that this talent flourishes unhindered by this sort of nonsense? The law actually provides for it. The Prevention of Sexual Harassment Act that came in 2013 says that you have to have local area committees.
Absolutely.
And honestly, these internal
committees. And that is something I think now we've got to see, take this forward, this movement that we've seen.
And those local area committees have not been set up.
That there needs to be. We've seen a reaction from the Mumbai Press Club, in fact, saying that they want to. They stand by all the people who've spoken out against sexual harassment, and they want to ensure that they form some sort of committee to take these sort of complaints forward as well. Well, we'll just slip into a short break now. After that, I'd like to go to Raya Sarkar again and ask her whether she felt her list had an impact, and whether she's hopeful now that what we're seeing, this resurgence, this Me Too, will also have some sort of an impact. After a short break. Welcome back. Well, we're talking about the Me Too movement. We've seen women speaking out, and what we're saying is time is up. The time's up for these men, and sexual harassment in the workplace cannot be allowed to continue. I want to go back to Raya Sarkar, who in fact started the Me Too movement last year in India when she came out with that list of academics. Raya, what do you feel was the result of that entire exercise of naming all those people? And do you feel something came of it? And do you feel something will come of what we're seeing happening right now?
I think the list did a good job in exposing something that has already been exposed many times, but it just like reinforced it, that that institutions do not have the resources or the structures in place for sexual harassment to be addressed, you know, as Karuna has already pointed out. And I think that when I was being asked that, oh, why don't these women go to their institutions? You know, my answer was that they can't because the institution doesn't have an ICC or doesn't have the body that is required for them to go and make that complaint. And also, secondly, I would like to add that, you know, since Brett Kavanaugh has come in discussion so many times, I think the crux of the debate around him is not if he should still be suffering for what he did, you know, when he was 15 or 16, it's if he is lying, how he chooses to address it or may have done long time ago. And I think the debate was around that. And,
all right. Right. Well, in fact, about Brett Kavanaugh, I remember President Trump spoke about it and said that he feels very scared for young men right now in the country. And I thought that was a ridiculous thing to say, because I think it's about time men started feeling scared, and because women have felt scared for so long. And it's about time that men also felt a little scared that, you know, you could be outed for bad behavior. I'd like to get more questions here. Yes, go ahead.
Actually, I would like to ask your take on the Me Too movement. Though I support it, I would also like, there's always a certain percentage of women who would name and shame the person whom they don't like. And this is something which is a form of harassment for the men. So what is the take on that? How far...
That is one of the issues that we were discussing. Let's get some men in as well. Go ahead.
First of all, I want to say that I am with this Me Too movement, but in the sexual harassment in workplaces, there are 90% more than 90% cases where FIR does not feed it in their police station's book of FIR. But do you know what our Indian government should do for this Me Too movement on the ground level?
Well, I'd first like to see the government actually reacting to what's happening in this entire MeToo movement. Yes, any more questions over here? Yes, go ahead.
I want to say that, as we know, that AIB has deleted the videos of Ustav Chakrabarty, but we don't think it is enough. What are the next steps that the government should take to make it possible for the man to
You'd like to see more sort of action against him.
My question is for Sir. Sexual harassment, especially within the university space, there are times when there is an internal complaints committee, but they are biased towards the accused. They are in support of the accused. And many times women who come up, their identity is made public. So in such an environment, how do young women take the courage to come up, and how do they put their faith in the due process?
Well, before, Sir, I'd like to go to Namita on that. Namita, what do you feel about
Well,
what
we saw what happened in the St. Stephen's case, and this is why I say, and I want to, before I answer that question, just clarify that no matter, because there's a lot of talk here about due process, and there is an impression that is being sought to be created that feminists are against due process. We're not. I'm not saying due process should be junked. I'm just saying please understand where the anger is coming from, because due process is not working. We have to think of alternative redressal mechanisms. The St. Stephen's case, JNU had a very, very robust system, which is now, I believe, I've not followed it recently, which I believe is being sought to be redressed when it needs no redressal. They had a very good system of addressing sexual complaints of
all right,
by
so,
students.
Well, we're almost out of time. So, Sigda, last words. What do you want to see happen now? We've spoken about this before, but yes.
Women just don't accuse like men of sexual harassment because they don't like them. I think that's very...
According to what that young lady there said, I think it's very difficult for women to come
notion.
Out, actually.
As I said, I've now worked in the industry for 10 years. I can't think of a single female colleague who hasn't faced sexual harassment. In nearly each of these cases, they have proof, either, you know, like they have kept records of conversations or, you know, emails, or have, like, you know, copies of complaints that they've filed with someone or the other. And, you know, when you think about the levels of threat that they face to their careers and their reputation and just like the relationships, like, I can't think of a single woman who has, like, accused a man of
I'm so sorry, we're completely out of time, and I think that's the note we want to end on, and perhaps see more and more women speaking out. And clearly, time is up. It's time that men stop believing that they can carry on as usual, and that women are going to be speaking out, whether on social media, whether going through the due process in internal committees. So thanks so much for watching, everyone. Good night.